DFW Mobile.
Hey, Ken, is it quitting time at Bedrock?
Yeah, you know it is. How are you doing today, Dave?
I'm aching for quitting time. I'm aching for the official start of the weekend. It hasn't officially started for me, but it sounds like it has officially started for you.
Yes, it has. And it was a good week. It was a really good week. I enjoyed it. And no worries. I got my co-worker, he's laying bomb a little HT and that to listen to this weekend. He's hoping, he's thinking maybe he might want to get into it.
Hey, there you go, Johnny Appleseed. Planting apple seeds, hoping the trees will start growing. That's cool. That's a good idea.
Several people here in the last couple of months, you know, asked me about it and thinking they might be getting interested. Actually, my neighbor, he's got my technician's book.
My dad used to get me those books all the time. Every couple of years, he'd toss me one of those books. When I was cleaning up bookshelves, I came across like five or six of those books. Eventually, it took hold, but he never pushed real hard, but he just tossed me one of those books every now and then.
And it's as long as Johnny.
No, I was a late bloomer. His dad and my dad were doing field day together when we were, you know, less than 10 years old. We'd go up to Mount Pisgah, run up and down the mountain while they were setting up for field day. He got into it. I didn't. I didn't get into it till I was in my 40s.
I was almost 60.
Well, I was doing radio control airplanes, so I was doing radio. It just wasn't the same kind of radio. But I always had it in the back of my mind. I wanted to get into amateur radio so that I'd know more about the radio. And sure enough, that worked. That helped. It didn't give me as much as I thought it would give me, but it gave me a lot.
I understand a lot and everything. I can't wait till they start up those extra classes back in Greer. I'm hoping they start them up in person here as soon as this COVID's over with.
Yeah, it's like Ray Allison says, that license is a license to learn, right? And that's what you got to do. You got to buckle down. And, I mean, if you really want to know how radio works, I mean, I wanted to know how bad it worked enough to start doing radio design. And that's pretty deep. When you start getting into that, you're getting really, really deep. I did the building of the radios, put them together, but that's just being able to follow instructions. That's not doing design work, which is what I'd really like to be able to get into. But that's so deep that I wouldn't get able to I wouldn't have time to do the other things that I want to do. So it's a balance, you know?
Electronics is not me. I never really got that electronic bug. You know, I mean, I like to know how it works and be able to work it, but as far as how the radio works inside, yeah, that's probably really not me.
It gets really, really low into the time frame, you know, nanoseconds of time slices, just tiny, tiny time slices of things that are going on. So when you get down that low, you're lost in everything that's happening in the real world. Right, then you have to back out of that and get back into the real world. That transition's kind of hard on your brain. It is on me anyway. It's fun, but it's a lot to put together. Because I look at YouTube videos of other people doing that kind of work, and you see how they go through like a diagram and how they use their logic to figure out, you know, which way the electrons are going to flow and what's the voltage going to be and what's the resistance and, you know, what's the current that's going to go across through there, and which way is it going to go, and what's going to do when it increases. There's just so many logical expressions going on there. It's just mind-boggling. Who knows all of it? I don't think anybody does. And then you look at traces on a board and look at the way they were laid out. Somebody laid that out in a CAD tool, and hundreds of them running parallel to each other, and then they split off and go in different directions, and then they merge back. That's intricate design, but it's pretty cool to think about. Somebody does that for a living.
You do it so much during the day, and it's so, like you said, mind-boggling, and you pay attention to it, and that when you get off, the last thing you want to do is radio. You know what I mean? It's kind of like you're on a computer all day, last thing you want to do is get on social media on a computer. And that. So, you know, that's why, like, I tried to do some tournament fishing several years ago, and that, and I did for a couple of years, but then it just sucked the fun out of fishing for me, so I just quit it.
Well, I can relate to that with airplanes. A buddy of mine that I went to high school with, he's no longer with us. We got together and started building our own kits. We had two kits, and we started manufacturing them and selling them. And it did good. We sold everything we could make, and we did, you know, we had my house I had a full basement, so we had a production line set up for both of those kits. And he would come over and spend time doing it, and I'd spend time doing it, and my wife was angry, me spending all my time working on airplanes, and his wife was the same way. And eventually we turned our hobby, flying airplanes, into a job, and it was no fun after that, right? The fun went out of it. So you're right, that can happen. But on the flip side, I do high-volume transactions at work, and I have the hobby of distributed computing, and I can transition from one to another and not lose a step in enjoyment, right? Transition from high-volume APIs at work to high-volume distributed computing for like folding proteins for COVID-19 to help the scientists decide what's important and what's not, or looking at, you know, the two black holes circling each other and the gravitational waves that come off of them and analyzing those. I can enjoy that right after work. I can leave work and go into that, and you're still sitting in the same spot. You're looking at the same monitor, but you're doing something totally different. So it all depends. It can go two different ways. W4DJW.
Right. Well, I know if I do something physical, I'm not near as tired as if I do a mental, something mental all day long and really focused and concentrating. Man, it just wears me out. I'm ready to shut her down when I get home and not really do much of anything. KN4TFW.
Well, you know, your brain can, when you're thinking really, really deep, your brain can absorb more energy from your body than any other muscle in your body. It's like it can take up 30% of all your resource capacity. And while you do that for a long time, you can drain. You can drain your body in a hurry using your brain when you're really thinking.
Definitely right. So did you get to go fly your airplane again?
Steve and I went up to Campobello and flew last Saturday morning for a couple of hours. That's all we could stand. I haven't been back up there since then. We'll probably go this weekend. I don't think he's going to be able to go this weekend, but he'll be able to go the next weekend. But I've been working on I got two more airplanes ready. I got the Foamy's, the one I took out to the old airfield that has a new site, WCRC, the one that's down south of here. And Campobello is the one I went to recently. I took the fixed-wing airplane up there. I've been flying a Foamy around at all the different airfields, the Foothills Flyers, the Campobello Flyers, and the WCRC Club Field. So the Foamies are one thing. That's like park flyers. That gets your thumbs back into working order, right? Because they're rusty as they can be. You got to knock off the rust and get them working again before you pick up something like a fixed wing airplane or a helicopter or a multirotor. So I got the fixed wing down. Now I'm getting back into the multirotors, which they've got a lot more configuration parameters you have to go through before you just get out and start flying them.
The other day about, you know, getting them with cameras where they check all the towers and the power lines, and there's a definite need for that, so you don't have to keep climbing all the way up all of those things. That's for sure.
And this is the time, you know, you look back in time and you look at Apple and say, boy, what if I would have bought 1,000 shares of Apple when it was $1 a share? And I look at how much it is now. You'd been rich. You'd been filthy rich, right? So this is the beginning of that kind of, you could start an enterprise in that area right now. And you'd be one of the first ones in. You'd be the Apple of of all of that, you know, ability to scan real world into 3D models, right? Because that's, it's, I mean, Our world is demanding that kind of thing. Everybody's thirsty for what's coming across on their iPhones or their smartphones or their computers, and somebody has to maintain all of that. So that's a window of opportunity just starting to crack open.
Yeah, there is definitely, but that's not, you know, something that I'm interested in, I don't think. But, you know, you said you were going to maybe fly this weekend. You know, they got the S word in the forecast.
Is that still the case? I heard that, I heard we're going to have like 3 days of the coldest weather we've had in 3 years straight, like down in the teens all day, every day, and at lower than that at nighttime. But I thought they called that off. Maggie and I went out in the backyard for lunch break today, and I flew one of the multirotors and took some pictures, some 360-degree pictures, and I did it with short sleeves on, and Maggie stayed out there the whole time. She didn't run back in the house because she got cold. So it was kind of nice out there. Are you sure that is still the same prediction? That hadn't changed?
The cold weather, he changed that and everything, but I noticed this morning they showed, a snow line all the way down, you know, to the interstate. And that, but they didn't really talk about it. And then here just, 30 minutes ago on my phone, it popped up winter weather, you know, sleet and snow and that for the upstate maybe.
Well, that does make it more difficult. The cold I can deal with layers, just put on a bunch of layers of clothes. And when you're out there at the field, if you've got enough layers on, you're sweating. Even if it's 30 degrees outside, you're sweating. Your fingers get cold and your nose gets cold. But you got gloves and stuff for that to keep those warm. And as long as you're moving around doing something and you got multiple layers on, you stay warm. But the wind, can't do anything about that. The wind spoils everything. Wind gets up over 15, 20 miles an hour, you may as well stay home. Unless you got a big helicopter, they can handle that. But fixed-wing airplanes and multirotors, they don't handle big wind very good at all. But snow's not a problem for multirotors, and some airplanes can handle it okay without a problem. But the wind, wind and rain, that'll knock RC flying out of the picture in a heartbeat.
Get money on repairs, right?
I remember when I was competing back in the 70s and 80s, and we were flying at Raleigh-Durham Field. Robert Vest and Bob Richards. Bob Richards' wife's name was Martha, and Bob built his own design, and he called his design a Miss Martha. Miss Martha was the hot airplane to fly back in that day. It was the airplane to beat. And Bob Richards was out there flying it. I mean, it was throughout the Southeast. It was all the way down to America's Georgia. They had Martha's. We had Martha's in this area. All the clubs in this area had Miss Martha's. They were in North Carolina. They were in Georgia, Tennessee, South Carolina, Florida. They were everywhere. We were over there at Raleigh-Durham. We were watching him fly. It started raining, so everybody's huddled up underneath the shelter because it was a competition event, waiting for the rain to get by. So Bob pulls his airplane out, Bob Richards, and he starts flying knife edge down the center of the runway, and it's pouring down rain out there. And it's just water spraying off the bottom of his airplane. He's just flying it up and down the field, back and forth, water spewing off of the airplane left and right. It never bothered that plane a bit. That's the first time I ever saw anybody and the last time I ever saw anybody do that.
Got them so close to real nowadays that I guess, you know, I guess because it's so light, the wind really blows it around. But if it was just a heavy rain, I guess it could still fly as long as it wasn't really super windy.
And the worst thing is the rain getting into the receiver, the electronic components, because those airplanes aren't waterproof. They're just balsa wood and monocoat. So you got to build it. Some people that fly over lakes, they put their receiver in a baggie, and then they put a rubber band around the servo wires that are going into it. And they buy servos that have O-rings around the arm that swings the control surface, and so water can't get in. Because they're flying, like, with boats and stuff like that. That's the way those guys that do boats have to do all the time, because they can flip upside down in a heartbeat. I figured he must have done something like that with that airplane, not to be worried about it getting in there, because if you don't and water gets in the receiver, it's just like water getting in your smartphone. It's done. It's over with.
I see quite a few pictures on Facebook of people flying them, because one of my buddies, he's big into that. He lives up in Tennessee now, but, yeah, he's really good at flying them. on that. So I guess you got to protect your investment. You know, if you got several thousand dollars in it, a couple of O-rings is well worth the cost.
W4DJW, those were fun days. They don't have that kind of competition anymore. But nowadays it's all serious. It's people being really serious. It's the FAA is involved. The FCC is more involved than they used to be. It's everybody's cracking down on it. So the 70s and the 80s, they were the time to grow up with that kind of thing, because the glider guys would fly up 2,000, 3,000 feet. They'd get in a thermal, and they'd have to have binoculars to see their airplane to get it back down to the ground. There was nobody worried about full-scale and model airplanes running into each other. And it never did happen. But if you ever look at one of those maps that shows all of the airplanes that are flying over the U.S. at one time, the skies are very crowded. So I guess it's a good thing they're cracking down on it now before it does happen.
Yeah, I'm paying attention to make it happen. I thought I was going to get to see a real-life helicopter and plane crash. There was one that was hovering here a few weeks ago over the bank robbery there in Greer, and there was a little Learjet coming in, and man, they looked like they were close, but they probably cleared each other by about 500 feet. I think the jet was about 500 feet above him. That's what it looked like. But that seems a little bit close.
That's the way the Blue Angels and those others. That's the way they give you the impression that they're only like feet away from each other, but they've got distance in another plane that you don't know about. So they might be, you know, 3 feet away from each other in a plane that is perpendicular to your eyes looking at it. But in the plane that's parallel to your eyes looking at it, they might be 20 feet apart from each other. A lot safer than, and that can happen when we're, a lot of times at the end of the year, what we used to do is take all your junk airplanes out there and we'd go, last one flying gets a reward. Everybody put money in a pot or something like that. And you take all your junk airplanes out there and you put them all up in there and you try to hit each other. And you try as hard as you could. And we might fly for an hour or 2 hours trying to knock it. And every once in a while you get a midair. Every once in a while. And you're trying to hit each other. It's not easy. There's a lot of space out there.
I mean, if you're waiting on it to be 5 o'clock in the weekend to start, how are you talking on the radio? Are you still working?
Yeah, I got more than one window open. I got two screens. I got a screen on the left and a screen on the right. The screen on the right's work, and I'm finished with my last meeting, and my emails are still coming in, and I'm answering them while I'm talking to you, and I'm just hoping nobody pings me and wants to start up a meeting. You know, those ad hoc meetings. Before it's quitting time in bedrock for me, right, on the West Coast, because my hours are West Coast hours. For me, it's really 1:23 right now. For you, it's 4:23.
Yeah, the daughter works for Amazon from home in Kentucky, and she's on West Coast hours.
It's kind of nice because, you know, you don't have to get... I get up and sit, my eyes pop open at 5, 6 o'clock, and I'm up, and I hear you guys talking while you're on your way to work. But I just listen in because I'm doing something else at the same time. And that's kind of nice, not having that kind of pressure. I kind of wander in about 9 o'clock my time, which is 6 o'clock their time, right? So I'm late. For me, I've always been the one to be at work at 7 o'clock in the morning. So I'm super late for me, 9 o'clock, but it's 6 o'clock in the morning their time, so I'm super early. And then, you know, it's a few hours before people start showing up, and by the time that happens, I've already got my 50 emails that came in overnight. I'm already through all of those, and then they know that I leave a little bit earlier than they do. I don't work 10 or 12 hours a day. I used to. But I cut that back to about nine or ten hours a day now, and it's not so bad.
They're on West Coast first shift time. Yeah, the daughter's on West Coast second shift time, and so she's not shutting it down until like 2 in the morning our time, I think.
W4DJW, that is what is rough when we have a weekly deployment on Saturday night at midnight Pacific time. That's 3 o'clock in the morning our time when the release is just getting started on Sunday morning. 3 o'clock Sunday morning, you got to wake up and go in there. I used to have to do that. I don't do that anymore. I got a team that does that now, and if they need me, they'll call me.
I know that I can get up way early in the morning and work fine and that, but that staying up late, man, my brain just don't hardly do it. When the chickens are ready to go to bed and the sun goes down, man, I'm ready.
That explains why we don't hear you checking into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net at 9 o'clock in the evening.
Hear me, that means that for some reason I happen to be up and about and doing something. And I miss checking in, but it's like, man, by the time, you know, depending on the day, if my call's the last call, it's like, man, you're 9:30 before I can check in.
W4DJW, well, you know we got a pre-net check-in. You can check in without having to be there.
On voice or over the online, because I use online check-ins at 6 o'clock in the morning for, you know, 9 o'clock in the evening check-ins.
Yeah, the list gets purged every night at midnight or midnight 01 or something like that. And anybody can check in for that anytime during the day for the net that night. But then it all gets purged, so you can't, like, check in a day ahead of time. But you can check in during anytime during the day for that night's net. And that's what Fred does every morning at 6:30. Fred checks himself and Isla in every morning at 6:30. That's who you're hearing. I hear him doing it, too.
Picked up the call sign to see who was up checking in that early, because they're probably like me. They don't stay up late at night, but he's up early in the morning, because that thing will just pop on. If you turn the repeater loose, it'll pop on.
Yeah, it's got a switch in there that you can turn it off and say, don't announce it over the air, or you can announce it over there. It's kind of good to announce it over the air, though, because it lets other people know that it's there so that they can use it as well. So better to pre-check in than not check in at all. W4DJW.
Right. I guess I could do that. I know I did early check-in on the 80-meter check-in. Night before last, I think.
That's the 7 o'clock net on 3915. Is that the one?
Roger, that's the one, KN4TFW.
I got to get back to that. I got a whisper beacon that's running all the time, and I use that radio to check in. I haven't done that in quite a while. I have to turn whisper off to do that, and I don't like turning it off. I like leaving it running around the clock.
Last weekend, it was probably, I'm going to say it was almost 2 months that I wasn't on HF, but I finally got back on. We started, you know, some of the contests are starting back up, and We enjoy, just like me and Ed and Andrew, just seeing, you know, finding an operator that's calling out and seeing who can be the first to get him.
Ed, that's the one whose call ends in NAP? Is that Ed?
Roger that.
And who's the other one? I don't recognize the other one. What's his call?
KO4CEF.
Okay, so that's a new call. So I haven't memorized that one yet. I've memorized yours and Ed's and Tim and Mike. Tim's the one that TOT, and Mike is NXE, right?
And we got a new one that he joins us on Thursdays, Patrick, and it's KO4, I believe it's HKX.
Yeah, I haven't memorized those yet. If I'm like on YouTube, I'll mute you guys while I'm listening to somebody talking on YouTube. So I miss some of the mornings.
Down in this area, he's out of Brevard, so he's on either later in the afternoons or early. He'll catch us at 6 or 5:30 on Thursdays.
So how far are you on your return to home route so far? Are you like halfway there or three quarters there?
I'm still about 10 minutes, 15 minutes out probably. I'm up here at Gap Creek Road in 29.
How's the traffic out there? Does it still look like everybody's out and about?
Fairly light for today. Usually it's a little bit heavier than this. I know when you get down here towards that, you know, that new cut through, what is it, 80 or something that runs back over towards BMW, usually the traffic starts picking up really bad.
Well, you've been going to work during COVID. Have you noticed people around you picking up, or you guys got special precautions? Like Johnny told me, you guys had like red teams and blue teams at the previous place where you used to work. Red team, blue team, yellow team, and the yellow team can't use the facilities, the blue team. Is that how you guys do it?
Here, everybody wears wears a mask if you're close and that, but all of the office personnel and that, they're on a every other day schedule, so they split them up, so you know it was only half of the office people there, and throughout the whole plant only probably employs less than 80 people, so you know you split that up between days and nights and everything, and there's not a lot of people there at the same time.
Well, that's good. That's my wife got word this week that she has to go back Monday. Well, she's got to start going back Monday. She doesn't have to be there on Monday, but she has to start going a few days a week. And she said on her floor, when she goes in, she'll be the only one on her floor to start with. So she's just leaving her desk here to go sit at her desk there. Nobody around her there, nobody around her here. It'll be the same thing, just a different location.
And now I'm back there where I used to work at Fabri-Cal. My old partner, I guess his wife tested positive, so he tested positive, although he never had any symptoms. But that was 4 weeks ago, and he can't get a negative test yet.
You mean he keeps going back and it's still positive? W4DJW. I wonder how they tell that from antibodies. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know enough about how that works. That's kind of weird. I've had two employees that got it. One, she got it while she was in India. She was at home on vacation and got it. She was supposed to be back. You know, she stayed on vacation 2 more weeks until she got over it and could test clean. And then she came back. And another one, she lives in Atlanta. And her husband drives the delivery routes, and he got it, and then she got it from him. So she was out of work for a couple of weeks, but she's back now, too. So everybody's back, and only 2 people have gotten it so far, but everybody's been working from home. And they told us it might be 2022 before we go back in.
Immediate supervisor, his wife tested positive, but everybody's okay, but he's got to wait so many days and then get the test negative in order for him to come back. This will be the second time for him. His son got it, but, I mean, his son runs track, and he continued to run track, but he just tested positive, so, you know, they were out. And that, so my old work partner that's tested positive 4 times, I guess he's on unemployment now, and that trying to get a good test.
So they're kind of like asymptomatic carriers. They don't get sick from it, but they've got the bug, but they're not getting sick from it.
Yeah, and that, but dang, I mean, how do you get rid of it? If you don't ever have any symptoms for your body, you run a fever and you fight it and you kill it off, but if you're not having any effects of it, how do you get rid of it? KN4TFW.
W4DJW is supposed to take its course and die, I'm thinking. And if you're in isolation, you can't pick up another bug. I mean, you still have to have food delivered to you. So it's like when I bring in the mail or I bring in somebody delivers something and I hand it to my wife, that's her daily dose of COVID. She orders stuff all the time, so she's getting stuff coming delivered all the time. But that's we jokingly refer that to her daily dose of COVID. I guess if you're getting stuff like that, you stand a chance of getting it that way. If he's in isolation and he's still picking it up, that must be that'd be the only way I could think of he could continue to get it.
He doesn't even feel bad at all, you know what I mean? It's like it's just a regular day for him, but now you just can't go back to work. And that, so he's been trying to get some, he called it his testing out retirement.
Sounds like his blood is the vaccine, right? If he keeps getting it and he's never affected by it, then that's the kind of blood you want.
I heard that, but, you know, early on when I was still working there, I was worried for him because he's got real bad breathing issues and asthma and everything and that, and I figured, you know, boy, if he ever got it, it would be bad. But, it's just fine. So I don't know. It just affects different people different ways, I guess.
W4DJW. Yeah, I don't know enough about how all that works to really get a good understanding of it. Anyway, am I holding you up from getting in yet, or are you getting close to the home?
You helped me out. You just don't know how much shorter and more enjoyable the ride seems when you're, you know, just chit-chatting with somebody. But I made it all the way to 29 and 14.
Well, I know. I like to do that, too. That's why I don't never go. I never use my wife's car. She's got a nicer car than I do. It'd be nicer to drive her car than it would be mine, but it doesn't have a radio in it, so it's out of the question.
It doesn't have a radio in it. I hadn't really tried to talk her into putting one into it yet, but she don't mind it when I listen to it when I drive the truck.
As long as my wife's not doing anything else, it's okay. She'll listen to it, and she'll listen to me talking to the other people, and every now and then she'll chime in and say something. But not while I've got the mic squeezed. She'll never talk when the mic's... If I squeeze that mic, she stops talking immediately. It's kind of weird. I don't know. But sometimes she's wanting to talk to me after I've already started a conversation with somebody else. And she feels like she should have priority over ham radio. And sometimes she does.
Matt, like I was going to get on... One night I was going to get on HF and that, but Susan came home. So I usually save that for, you know, since we work such opposite schedules, she's usually working in the afternoons and evenings, and I'm in the mornings, and that, we don't see each other that much. So whenever we're together and off together, I usually don't try to tie it up doing radio things.
Yeah, I can understand that. My wife asked me, she says, you going to miss me when I go back? She's been working from home for a year now. Well, March would make a year. She's just short of a year. She's, you going to miss me when I go back to work? And I told her no, because when I'm in between meetings, she's in a meeting. And when she's in between meetings, I'm in a meeting. So, no, it's not going to be much different than it was before. We're just not going to be located in the same place.
Fuel bill's going to go back up now.
She's got one of those hybrid Avalons. She fills it up like once every month and a half or something like that. It gets 50 miles a gallon. It's got an enormous tank in it. I think she pays more for insurance than she does for gas.
I mean, I think it was Mike was telling me that they charge you like an extra $500 in taxes every year because you're not buying as much fuel as everybody else.
Well, her car's only a year old, and but her taxes are very high. I said, your car's not worth that much. It's not worth that much more than mine. Her taxes are double what mine are. Mine's older. Mine's 3 or 4 years old. Hers is a year old, but her taxes are over double what mine are.
He drives that Prius, and I believe he said that it's an extra $500 because you're not buying, you know, gas and that, and they need it for the roads.
So I guess they do the same thing to Tesla drivers, too. I guess they have to pay higher tax, too, huh?
I would imagine, but I don't think the dealership's not going to tell you that when you buy it.
They didn't tell me that when I got her Avalon, but I know I had to... hers just ran out. I just had to get tags for hers. And that's an ouch. That's painful.
I gotta go and get my taxes done this weekend. And it's like, man, this is going to hurt because, you know, leaving there at Fabrical and getting my pension money from there and then getting taking some 401k out to pay some stuff off when I was furloughed and that. So I did have taxes taken out, but I feel it's still going to hurt.
Yeah, well, my wife usually asks me, I have to pay every year. And I don't remember when the last time I got something back was, a long, long time ago. But I figure it's better I hold on to it throughout the year than it is for them holding on to it. And you're going to pay the same thing in the end anyway. But she says, you want to split this up into two payments? No, let's just get this pain over with. Let's just get it done. I don't want to feel this pain twice.
When I was at Fabrical, I used to have extra money taken out to go to federal so that I made sure that I didn't have to pay.
That's the way I used to do it, too, but not anymore. I'd rather hold on to it and use it throughout the year than them hold on to it and use it throughout the year.
talk about traffic. Now, right here at Wade Hampton and Buncombe, man, that's busy.
That's Buncombe Super Road, Buncombe Super, somewhere in that area. Where is that? Target? Where? Help me out with which one's Buncombe.
It's a Taco Bell.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know where Taco Bell is. That's easy.
290 in Wade Hampton, but, you know, there's two intersections of that because it turns.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it. Either 101 in Wade Hampton or 290 in Wade Hampton. And that is a very, very busy. That's probably our busiest. That one or the other end of Greer, probably the busiest that we've got. I think it's that one. This is our busiest intersection.
90 between Wade Hampton and Greenville Tech. Man, it's gotten gosh awful terrible.
I can see that from my house. I can raise a multi-rotor up 400 feet above my house, and I can take pictures of that out in front of Greenville Tech and all of Greenville Tech, Northern Campus, and get all of that in the pictures, and Little Rebel and the Sphinx gas station and all that. And, yeah, those cars are just lined up like a parking lot.
I'm at Field across from Ingalls, and we'll be walking, and the traffic is just dead stops. And it's like, man, I'm glad I don't live out that way. But it's starting to get too crowded for me. I guess when I retire, I'll have to try to move out into the country somewhere.
That's what I'd like to do. You out there in Whitey, at Whitey's, that's where you walk the dog?
Yeah, just between Whitey's and that graveyard there, kind of where the ball field is. You know, this ball field right there, I walk her in that field right there because it butts up to the back of the house. I ain't got to get out on the road, KN4 TFW.
Yeah, I thought about going over there to take some pictures, raising a multi-rotor up right there, take a whole bunch of pictures, because there's a lot going on in that area, but I've never stopped to do that. Don't know how it's patrolled or anything like that. Might be a bunch of soccer moms over in that area. Jump out and jump all over you.
It's that ball field and that, but there hadn't been anybody in there in months.
Probably ought to do that. Just go over there and try it out. You can do it with a little tiny multi-rotor that'll fit in the palm of your hand, and once it gets up above 200 feet, nobody sees it or hears it.
To see the pictures, since I live in that area, and that there's a lot of shooting of ammo goes on back over there, and there's some coyotes back in there and everything, so there's a lot goes on.
When you get up that high, you can take pictures 360 degrees. You point it straight down, you take four pictures at 90 degrees up, and then you bring it up 30 degrees, and you take eight pictures, bring it up 30 more degrees, take eight pictures, bring it up 30 all the way up, take eight more pictures. Then you combine all of those into one 360-degree picture. When you rotate that around and you look in the direction of downtown Greenville, you can see the buildings in downtown Greenville from Greer sticking up above the horizon. You can see a long way when you do that.
That right there at the church, you can see the tops of the buildings in downtown Greenville. But I have turned into the subdivision, so I'm going to say I really enjoyed the conversation. About the longest conversation I ever had with you on that, but I really enjoyed it, and thanks for talking me in, and I'll look forward to catching you another time, and I'll try to stay up late enough to check into the net once or twice anyway. KN4 TFW 73.
Sounds good, Ken. I enjoyed it. You have a great weekend, and I look forward to hearing you on the net some a little bit, or seeing your call sign in the pre-check-in list. Anyway, take care. Have a good one. W4DJW Clear.